This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Welcome, Carm Capriotto, the Service Aftermarket's podcast pioneer. Join me each week for aftermarket insights from my guest host and an industry first, a virtual shop tour. Use the industry's premier podcast as your personal networking resource. And as always, know that you'll learn one thing. The video for this show is on the Aftermarket Weekly page on remarkableresults.biz or on my YouTube channel. I have a great guest host each and every week, and we kind of dig in some really cool and important things that are going on in their world. And we also do the virtual live tour of my guest shop. In fact, who's with me? And look at that, Justin Fricke from Car Time Auto Center, Dundas, Minnesota. Hey, Justin.
How are you?
I'm good, bud. In Minnesota, no snow up there yet?
No, it's abnormally warm. It was like 60 degrees a week ago.
Well, so glad to have you here. Justin is a member of the National Napa Auto Care Council, and I met you in Atlanta, I think.
A couple times, yeah.
A couple of months ago. We're here advancing the aftermarket, which is, my mission and passion in life to bring as much business acumen and smarts to the automotive aftermarket. Glad to have you here. And remember, everyone, we're going to get an extra special treat because this is also a used car facility. So not only is it automotive service, but it's used cars. And I do want to find out a little bit about what's going on in the used car market. I'm so curious. And so, Justin, you just may become my used car go-to guy from now on.
Well, whatever I can do.
Yeah, and whatever you can do. Thank you. And we're coming to you live from the Dorman OE Fix Studios. There's a little behind-the-scenes shot of what I lovingly call the Carm Cave. Yes, that's the studio. So, hey, man, how's business, Justin?
It is crazy. It's a holiday week here, so everybody's trying to get out of town. And, normally we're 2 or 3 days out, but on a holiday week when people are traveling, it stacks us out 4 or 5, 6 days sometimes.
So you're that far out? I mean, some guys are saying 10 days, but you're out a week?
Yeah, we're out till Monday right now, so it's at 4 days of work. We have 11 bays, though, and 8 mechanics, so that's a lot of production.
That is, wow, big place. I think you were telling me that, or I read on your website, you've got 65 cars for sale, but you normally keep how many?
We try to stock 100. Yeah, 100 cars on the lot, whether they're on the lot or in process to get to the lot. So we're a little short right now. We'll catch up.
Well, I can't wait to get back to you and ask you a few questions about the used car business. But first, our great partners of Dorman, I have something really important to say. Hey, we all know that fixing cars is different than how the OE builds them. Now, take fuel lines, for instance. Fuel lines run and rust along with the chassis of the vehicle by nature. Now, especially in the colder months, trucks can be exposed to snow, salt, or rain, causing failure due to the corroded fittings, deterioration in the line. Now, to help you in your wallet, Dorman Products team of engineers have redesigned the typical fuel line. Introducing Dorman's flexible stainless steel braided fuel lines. Made from braided stainless steel over flexible PTFE tubing, this upgraded material features a corrosion-resistant design. Each fuel line is an exact fit with the dimensions of each application. Now, improved durability is the highlight of this new design. This innovation is a Dorman OE fix, which means it's something that the original manufacturer doesn't offer. These fuel lines are quality assured and backed by their team of product experts and more than a century of automotive experience. Hey, want to learn more about Dorman's innovations? Visit dormanproducts.com/tour. So used car business, my friend, how risky do you think it is to buy these higher priced vehicles and that they, the prices may come down because of the chip issue?
Yeah, it's a little bit risky. Like we were talking earlier, you never really know. It is like playing the lottery a little bit. It's like housing. Your house right now, the housing market's pretty high. It's risky to buy something pretty high. It's going to take a couple of years for it to really correct. There will be a correction soon, especially when the new vehicles hit the market again. But yeah, it's definitely is part of the reason we're a little bit short today, because we're a little bit hesitant to buy some of the vehicles we normally would because the prices are so high. We read somewhere the other day that there was like 26 vehicles right now within the last two model years that have over 40,000 miles on average are selling for more than they were bought for brand new as a used vehicle. So that just kind of tells you.
But why would someone want to make an investment in an item that is worth so much less?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of the same thing with housing. You know, people are still, I just built the house, you know, we're buying and building more expensive. Prices of everything is going up. If you want something and people are making some money, they want to spend it on something they want. And that's really the reason they're still buying vehicles.
Well, I find it fascinating. And I guess if I was a business person and listen, I just lost a vehicle and I've got, you know, somebody's got my hand, you know, I'm handcuffed.
Right.
I guess I've got no choice but to go out and spend, you know, on a vehicle that has 25, 30,000 miles on it, the sticker price when it was new.
Mm-hmm. It is hard, and we still have some people that come in, and the car buying experience has changed 180 degrees. You used to be able to walk in somewhere, the market was full of vehicles. You could kind of negotiate some pricing. Our dealership has been a best price dealer since the get go, 20 some years ago. So we put our best price out there. There is no negotiation on the price. Just on the trade, maybe is where you'd get a little bit of negotiation. But now, a lot of dealers are doing that, and it's not the best value price that you're getting that we try to focus on. It's you want this car, here's the market. It might be $4,000 or $5,000 more than you paid for it even 6-8 months ago, just because they have it and people want certain vehicles. So it does create a little bit of animosity between buyer and seller, because like you said, people are a little bit handcuffed. If they want the vehicle, they're kind of stuck paying a high price right now.
Wow, it's amazing. Great business, been there since 1999, and you not only have a great service business, but you have a great used car business too.
Yeah.
So a combination of both, and you have two partners.
We do. Yep. Jared Hubers and Luke LaCroix. Jared has been here probably 3 months longer than I have. I started as a mechanic. Jared came as a service manager, and then Luke LaCroix, he came as a salesperson, and worked himself into the sales management role. And then when John Peters and Troy Redenberg, who originally started Car Time, were deciding that it was time for them to get out, they decided that we were the three that they wanted to sell it to. So it was kind of a nice buyout plan. We talked a little bit about that at the Auto Care Council meeting sometimes about, you know, shop progression on what to do with future plans of places, like what are our shop owners going to do to keep their businesses going? Who are they going to sell them to? Succession planning. You know, we got into that in 2010. So I talked to Jason Rainey a little bit about that, helping with some maybe planning for people and succession planning in their businesses.
Very smart. I've done so many shows, Justin, on succession planning, internal, external candidates. And it's great to hear that a supplier, as you were mentioning, Napa, may come up and say, hey, what can we do something to help? And I think that's incredibly important, because the creativity of putting deals together, in my mind, should come from almost every touch point that you have. Hey, I know one of the other things that we wanted to talk about was getting kids involved in our industry. And I know you do a lot of stuff with that. And before we came on, we were chatting about some cool things that I know are going on in my neck of the woods. But what about yours?
So we have a program through the junior high and the senior high. It's called Career Tech Education. And we have like job shadowing availability in all kinds of trades. It's not just the automotive trade, welding, carpentry, HVAC, electricians, plumbing, stuff like that, masonry. We have a lot of good businesses around that team up with the high school counselors and the junior high counselors to have actually a job fair, I'm going to call it, day, where we bring in all of these different businesses, and they have displays where kids can kind of get their hands on in something to see if it's something that they want to maybe, you know, look at in the future. I know one of the problems and the reason we started doing it was because in Minnesota, they used to have a vocational credit that was a requirement in middle school and senior high. Now it's not required. It's an art credit. So you don't have to take a woods class, a welding class, an auto class. In junior high, it was called industrial tech. We built a lamp. So you had got some carpentry, you got some metalwork, you got some electrician in it. They don't do that anymore. So the kids don't have an opportunity to get their hands on and say, hey, maybe this is something that I really enjoy. Granted, like when I grew up, I was a farm kid. I grew up fixing stuff, building cars, go-karts and stuff like that. But some kids don't have that opportunity. So the only place they got to see it was in the school. And when we took that away from them, and in my community, we didn't require them to get a little bit of it. The enrollment in the classes dwindled to where they started shutting the classes off. Like they'd have two or three kids. So they said, well, we're not going to do the industrial tech class anymore. Let's just make them do something else. So we spent a lot of time just working with the counselors in the schools to say, how can we get this available for the kids to see if it's something they like to be interested in?
Thank you for that. Let's do one thing. I want your greatest advice and passion to the rest of the industry that's listening to this, that's not doing anything at this level, that has not reached out to a principal, to a counselor, to a teacher, to a career education class. How did you do it, and or what recommendations for a first step so a shop owner will get involved in education?
On our end, it was actually a teacher, one of the vocational tech teachers. He was the one who saw it happening and was like, hey, we need to step in this. And he reached out to other businesses. But I would say as a business, we're currently looking for technicians. Everybody is. There's people looking for electricians, carpenters, plumbers. For those businesses to go to the schools, to go to the tech schools and say, hey, do you have a program that's set up to where you can facilitate this type of thing where kids can see this who normally won't have a chance to get into it? Like, hey, let's have a day. I'm willing to have a field trip at my shop. Bring them out. I can show them what the auto industry is about, what we do, how it works. Even if it's for an hour or something, you might pique a kid's interest in saying, hey, that's something I might want to look into. Maybe not tomorrow, but maybe he'll remember that. I, for one, remember when I was a freshman in high school, I kind of always knew I was going to be in the auto industry, but I remember talking to a mechanic in town that I remember asking him like his favorite thing about his job, you know, and it was always different. It was always different. Everything was different every day. It was a puzzle. And I'm a puzzle guy. I'm like, oh man, it's kind of fun to take things apart and put them together every day. I kind of like enjoy that, working with my hands. And that always stuck with me, even though I wasn't in the auto industry at that point, but it was a couple of years down the road when I started working at NAPA. I knew that it was something that I always looked forward to doing in the future.
You know, what I found so interesting is I listened last week to a presentation on this program called The Big Picture. Question that was asked of this actual counselor lady, her name was Karen, where do kids fit after high school? That's what drives this particular program. And one other thing that I thought was fascinating, Justin, is she was talking about working with the kids for soft skills. Hey, Dwayne, there's my guy right there. Field trips are a great way to pique interest. And I loved that whole idea, Justin. Thank you, Dwayne, for being here on the field trips. But she said we're working with these kids on life skills, how to address an envelope. And you're sitting here saying, really? Really? Proper dress, handshake, the proper use of a telephone. You know, we use our phone for texting and other stuff. But if you were in a business and the phone rang, do you really know what to do? So I took a lot of great notes. I actually want to have her on an episode one day and continue to energize our industry about reaching out, shadowing, field trips. Thank you for that. Hopefully there's a few of you out there listening that'll just say, yeah, I got to get up off my butt and do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing about like piquing interest in where do kids fit. So I had a long conversation with the counselor one time. They would kind of hand pick kids to go to this career tech education. Like, hey, you need to go talk to the welding guy, or you need to go talk to the auto industry people. And I would label them, quote unquote, they would call them misfits. Like, hey, they're the kids that don't excel in school. They're not very good readers. They're engaged in a classroom environment. And I said, the stereotype around the trades needs to be broken in the school level. You have a 4.0 kid that's going to be a fantastic tradesman, but you never give them the option, because when they go into the counselor's office, the counselors, you're a 4.0 student, you need to go to a D1 school for something. You know, pick a University of Minnesota, pick a top school and go get a 4-year degree. Well, you know, you're forcing a kid to go into something. And I personally know 5 or 6 of my classmates that went to 4-year schools that don't use their degree and are in the trades and make more money than they ever would have in the degree field that they had. So, you know, getting the counselors to understand, like, don't push the kids that you feel are bad students into the trades, because they kind of think of them as a secondary career path, where they don't need to be. So that's part of the reason we work with the schools a lot is, hey, you know, I know maybe you went through 4 years of school to be a teacher, or you went through 4 years of school to be a, you know, get a business degree, but you don't necessarily need to be a top level student to be good at anything, or you don't need to be a low level student to be a tradesman. You know, so we work a lot with the schools to, hey, fix that mentality a little bit at an early age, so you don't really have them come up and feel like they have only one track to be successful.
So well said, and thank you for that. And hopefully someone will recognize the fact that because of where college tuitions are going and what we can do with the kids that want to, kinesthetic learners, they want to work with their hands, learn with their hands, that they would have a whole lot less debt, And she said this, and I wrote it down, and I had a really tough time believing in the statistic, but she said half the kids don't know what they want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine that 18 years old going to school for 4 years to figure out what you want to do for the rest of your life? Like, that's insane to me. I personally never went to a day of college in my life. Like, I knew that I was going to be a hands-on person. I knew I was smart enough to make business work. And so, you know, I went and did what I did and picked it and got really good at it, right? You don't have to go to get an education for that. Does it benefit you? Absolutely. I'm not going to talk anybody out of it, but it's one of those things where you just sometimes can work hard, create less debt, like you said, and be extremely successful in anything.
And do you have an apprentice going through your shop?
Yeah, we have one technician, Tyson. He's on the level 3 of the NAPA Auto Care Apprentice Program. So yeah, it's a little bit slow in the beginning to start, but I think he's really turned the corner now where he's actually getting to learn some more of the automotive technical stuff in that level. So he's enjoying it.
Hey, thanks so much. I hope that, you know, in this very short amount of time, we were able to motivate our great constituency out there, all the great people who listen to this podcast. And, you know, as we always say, we just hope we motivate you with one insight and one great idea, and boom, even if it was just one of you today on this show and or on the future listens that it'll be. So Justin Fricke, hey, we're going to actually get a tour of your place here in a moment. Boy, we've been busy, and man, are we ever putting out an awful lot of great, great content. We had a great Carmcast last week, Ready, Set, Vision 2022. It was just a great episode. We found out a lot of really cool things about the legacy of the 30th anniversary of Vision this year, and some really cool, neat new things that are coming up. And again, having to do with education, the ASECA Educational Foundation. I had Dave Kusa and John Epstein, the president and the chairman of that foundation, on, and we talked about what they're doing to raise money for all kinds of scholarships. In fact, I think last year they gave away 18 scholarships, and you'll be amazed at how they raise money for the scholarships. It's just great how they do it. And Town Hall Academy, Do We Earn Enough Respect? It's all about growing our brand and working with the community in ways that not many people would have recognized with Charlie Marcotte and Dustin Brown. And then we did a Supply Chain Part 2 that was recorded at Apex this year, and some really fascinating stuff that came out of there as we're wondering, you know, is it the demand? Is it the supply chain? Is it the container ships out in LA? So happy to have done all that for you, a chance to catch up. Okay, everybody. Wow, you're on the spotlight again, Justin. You're going to narrate this great tour.
Well, you know, in front of our building, the service entrance is just to the left of that dually right there. The sales entrance, the picture you saw before, that was a sales entrance, but looking down to the used car lot where we keep all the used cars. There's 5 garage doors on the front for the service bays. NAPA Gold certified. We were one of the first ones, I believe, maybe the first one of the first 50 or first 100 that got certified. So that was kind of nice. Our waiting area, NAPA Pro Image Interior actually helped us with in 2018, I believe we redid that. Redid the floors. They helped us with those kiosks. It kind of opened it up real nice.
Let's stop that and get an idea of how big this facility is. Now, it looks like you have a car showroom at the end.
Yes, we have one car over there. We originally built it to have two inside, but it just got a little bit too tight and we didn't have a big enough customer waiting area. So we made the customer waiting area bigger and put that wall up. You can see where that little pedal car is on top of the wall there. We put that wall up to create a little bit better divide between our sales department, where we have people talking about financing and stuff, and then our customer waiting area where, you know, sales customers and service customers both wait in that area for either their financing to come through or their vehicle to be repaired.
You know, it's been a long time, Justin, that I've actually seen waiters in a virtual shop tour.
It's a lot. We have a lot of people in there. Like with the COVID, we actually used to have more seating in there and we did take some out. We're trying to kind of progressively grow back. We can still maintain the social distancing suggestions so people feel comfortable to wait.
I love this ASE Wall of Fame here.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. We currently really only have one ASE Master. I just haven't recertified. I was a master technician when I was in the shop. And then we have a couple other ones that have two or three certifications that they just don't have their plaques up. And then our gold certification plaque. I use it too. We sponsor the high school fishing team, so I use that for their picture up there too, so they can see what we do in the community. This is our parts shelf. When parts come in from Napa or any parts supplier, they put them there. The service providers label them with the invoice. So when people know where they go, when the mechanics come looking for it, they know exactly where their parts are. Helps with some efficiency and they don't get lost in the back. 11 service bays in the back here. One alignment rack. I think we have 8 post hoists and 2 little pop-up hoists for like quick lube, brake job tire type stuff. 8 technicians, lots of Napa inventory. We have, we'll get to it. There's a back room here where a lot of our brakes and rotors and wheel bearings and stuff, we were actually talking about putting a Napa outlet in there where Napa would actually have a employee in there running the parts distribution out of our shop. It would have its own dedicated stop from the DC. This is our production board for mechanics, showing the hours that they were producing every day and every week. And what it does is it keeps them kind of going on where their week's going. It does help with a little bit of competition. You know, people are competitive and they want to do better and they see somebody excelling at their job. And if Luke is doing 10 or 11 hours a day, Jake is going to strive a little bit harder to get a little bit more production, get a little more efficient at his job. So it helps with efficiency. They know who they can talk to because the guys who produce more hours are usually a little bit better mechanics. So if they know who they need to talk to, they know when looking at that board who really is a good technician, and if they have any questions, they can ask them. Going to the back room here, where a lot of our inventory with brakes, chassis parts, and bearings is stored. Like I said, this is where that Napa was going to put an outlet in there. We ended up not doing it. Logistically, it just didn't work. But lots of brake pads, rotors, wheel bearings, chassis parts on the top row there. We actually had to build the mezzanine on top here because we, you know, you build a building and it's always big enough when you build it, and it's never big enough when you build it. So we had to add some space up on top. It's basically just office, like files, and, you know, we do a lot of invoices, so you got to keep that stuff for 7 years for the IRS, and you got to have somewhere to put it. So that's where that goes. This is our detail shop. We do have a detail center too. We have 2 full-time detailers that detail cars. It's a huge revenue generator for us. We probably do 60 cars plus a month on average. So 2 a day, pretty much. They're there almost every 6 days a week. They like to work. We built it dedicated just to detail. There was a point in time where we actually put hoists in this area and hired a bunch of mechanics. But then I did a lot of work with Vin Waterhouse on shop efficiency. And we actually do more work with 11 bays than we did with 13 when I added hoists in there. So in our break room here, the guys can put lunches in there, and we supply all the stuff except for the food really that they can eat. But I was talking to Peter McNeil at the last AutoCare council meeting, and he goes out and buys treats for them. And I thought that was a great idea. So I think I'm going to start doing that in there too. So they have some treats and a little benefit.
Excellent.
Just walking back up to the waiting room here, TVs. The center board is the Napa menu board. Like we do a lot of the, you know, Napa digital shop boards through there, coffee machine. There's the sales department again. We have 2 full-time car salesmen. Jared and Luke, my 2 partners, they do help on the sales side as well. Mustang 5.0 right there. Pretty hard to find right there. It's like a 20,000 mile convertible. So if anybody's looking for one, there it is.
So what would that sell for?
29,000.
And what year is it?
It's a 2014, actually.
Wow.
But it's so low miles that and it's the convertible 5.0 package. It's got the big Brembo brakes on it. So it's one of those, I think they call them Coyote clone cars that somebody, I don't think it's a full-blown registered Coyote car, but somebody's got some money in it. So it's a pretty sweet little ride.
How nice. I mean, to have something like that, that's the the kind of car you got to put in the showroom, right?
Yeah, it's terrible too, because my son comes in here after school sometimes and he's like, Dad, you got to take that thing home. We got to go for a ride. And it's tough because it's Minnesota and it's wintertime and the top's down and it's clean. So I don't want to take it down the road right now after it got clean.
You know, I love the idea that you've got a detail shop there, which obviously supports the used car facility, but it is a revenue generator.
Yeah. Yeah. For a long time, you know, it's a necessary evil when you own a car lot. You have to be able to clean your cars, because when they come from the auction or trade-ins, they're pretty gross sometimes. But we decided that, you know, if we're going to sell so many cars, we still have some downtime. Let's offer it up to the customers and see if they want to detail. And there was times where we'd get 3, 4, 6 weeks out in the summertime in detail appointments because it was so busy back there. The two people we have now, they're a father-son team. These guys are amazing. They've been detailing cars for over 20 years. They put out a really good product. They like to work, so they can do a lot more. Keep us caught up within a couple weeks now. So
you must have different packages to buy as far as detailing?
Yeah, we used to have a whole bunch of packages, it's one of those things where you diversify too much, you actually go backwards. So now we basically offer it just an interior, just an exterior, or a full detail, which would be inside and out. It's $150 for just the inside, $150 for just the outside. But if you do both of them at the same time, it's $200.
$200.
They've done a lot of research on the detail. There's a couple other detailers in town. If you go into the Twin Cities area, you're going to be paying $400 or $500 for details. We used to do them for $100. At that point, it just wasn't expensive enough. And that's why we got out 6 weeks. You just couldn't keep up with demand. So
it's amazing. Just do some very simple math. If you did all 200s and you had 60 cars, that's $12,000. And I can imagine that the cost of goods on that thing is like a grand. So that's all.
Pretty low, yeah. It's a good generator. I mean, you got some compensation and some chemicals. And chemicals aren't cheap, but it makes some money for us. So
amazing. Wow, it was a great tour. Thank you so much. I really, really like that. What a huge facility. I would love to have you be my used car expert.
Yeah, anytime
in the future. Thank you so much every time, because people ask me all the time, what should I do? And I can't give them an answer. I just can't. Justin Fricke, Car Time Auto Center, Dundas, Minnesota. Thanks so much for being here. Don't forget this. It goes out as a podcast on Saturday. You can listen to this thing or watch it on my YouTube channel. Next week, Becky McGinnis is going to be with us from Auto Vantage Service Center. Really excited about having Becky on and giving us a tour of her place. Again, Justin, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.